One thing I have to let you know is that the views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents. To find out more about this show and others, please log on to KUCI.org. Okay, you guys, you're in for a real treat. We have a young lady who's here with us, and she's going to be giving us some information that we have probably never experienced before, and I'm real excited about it. And her name is L. Hunter Lovins. Hunter, how you doing?
I'm excellent. How are you?
Oh, we're doing just well. Dr. Tony Pereira is here with us as
well. Hi, Hunter.
Hey, Tony. How are you?
Very, very good to hear your voice. Thank you.
Good to hear yours.
Coming to the show and giving us your experience and your knowledge.
Yeah.
We're looking forward to it. My pleasure.
You know, you guys, I want to do something first because there was a tragedy here in Irvine this past Sunday, and two people were killed in an automobile accident, and another two are in critical condition in the hospital here in Irvine. And so I just want to mention Kashan Herrera, Jeremy Shanklin, who passed in the accident, London Thibodeau, and Chanel Haywood, who are in the hospital right now. And so if you guys don't mind, let's take just a short moment of silence in memory of the two who passed and the two that are still here with us. Thank you guys so much, so much. It started off on a sad note, but we're going to end with a lot of joy. I know that because I'm real excited, real, real excited. And so, Hunter, let me just let you know and let the listeners know what I put on our website and what also appeared on social media. And what it says is tune in and turn up on Wednesday, July 5th, 2017, from 5 to 6 p.m. Pacific time to KUCI 88.9 FM's Awoke. And experience and transformation. Join host Calvin Gant and Dr. Tony Pereira as they focus on all aspects of eco-sustainability with L. Hunter Lovins, president and founder of Natural Capitalism Solutions. Learn, along with us, how and why this world-renowned author and consultant of sustainable development for over 35 years feels that we the people, our communities, and the companies we support are the most dynamic problem-solving force on the planet when we all work together. And that's L. Hunter Lovins. What I'd like to do to start off is a question that I love getting the answer to, and that is, how did you get from your childhood to the place where you are today? What happened? Were there a number of things that happened, but what molded you to be the person you are today and to decide that this is what I'm going to do?
I'm not sure that I had a great deal of choice. My mother organized with John L. Lewis in the coal fields of West Virginia. My dad helped mentor Cesar Chavez and Martin King. They were around the house when I was growing up.
Oh, my. Okay.
So I just kind of grew up as an activist. It's what you did.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so was there anything specific that happened to you that allowed you an opportunity to see what was going on in our world and the fact that something could be done about it? I know the people that you hobnobbed with, of course, were well aware, but when did you make the decision? How were you when you said to yourself, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to do what my parents and the people around them do.
I was probably pretty young. Uh-huh. The first demonstration that I remember was when I was 5 years old.
Oh, my goodness.
We went down to San Pedro near Los Angeles support some Quakers who were sailing a little boat. In theory, they were going to sail into the South Pacific nuclear test site to try to keep our government from blowing up nuclear bombs in the neighborhood of people who lived there. And they made it as far as Hawaii and got arrested. But it was an example of people who were putting their lives on the line for a better world for other people. And I guess I've always just felt that's what you do.
Wow, that's something. I you know, there's so many things that you're involved in, and I know we're not going to be able to cover hardly any of it today. But just let us know, you know, you started Natural Capitalism Solutions. Give us an idea of what that's all about, because natural capitalism as opposed to whatever capitalism that exists in this country today, what is the difference
world.
And how do you feel in regard to your doing something that's outside of the realm that we're accustomed to?
Well, my friend Randy Hayes, who was the founder of Rainforest Action Network, calls our current system cheater capitalism.
That sounds
because
right.
Because we are liquidating two forms of capital, human and natural capital, in order to get more money and stuff, manufactured and financial capital. And that's just bad capitalism. So a group of us wrote a book a few years back called Natural Capitalism, which showed for the first time that there isn't a conflict between business and the environment, between an economy of well-being and an economy of prosperity, and laid out what the best companies, communities around the world are doing to solve the problems facing us profitably. So Natural Capitalism Solutions works with companies, communities, countries on ways to implement more regenerative practices profitably. So on any given day, I may be advising the King of Bhutan or the Energy Minister of Afghanistan, or working with Unilever or another big company, or what I'll be doing next week, which is being with a group called the Unreasonable Goals Project, which takes 17 entrepreneurs from around the world, one for each of the Sustainable Development Goals, and I'll be a mentor for them, helping them do what it is they've set out to do more effectively, and then at the end we'll keynote the grand finale at the State Department, where we show that we can meet the UN Sustainable Development Goals profitably through entrepreneurship.
So the folks that the listeners who are not familiar with the Sustainable Development Goals of the United Nations, briefly, what are those?
These are a set of targets that all the nations of the world agreed to in 2015. They grew out of an amazing process in democracy called the Open Working Group, where people around the world, through an electronic online consultation and live consultations in countries around the world, said, here's what we want. These are the goals that the world should have. And they came up initially with hundreds of them, and then they battled it down to 17. They are...
The first one, I believe it's to eliminate poverty.
Eliminate extreme poverty.
Extreme poverty.
And they run all the way through protecting the oceans, gender equality. Number two is zero hunger. Number three is good health and well-being, quality education, as I mentioned, equality, clean water and sanitation.
Imagine that. Wow.
Imagine that. Affordable and clean energy, decent work and economic growth, industry and innovation, reduced inequality, sustainable cities, responsible consumption and production. Number 13 is climate action, life below water, which is the oceans, the rivers, the lakes, life on the land. Number 16 is peace, justice, and strong institutions. And then 17 is partnerships to achieve these goals.
Yeah. Wow, Hunter, you know, and that's really important to me, that partnership piece. And I'm wondering, because you've been pretty much on both sides of the line in terms of working with the government and working outside of the government, especially when you were younger. How does that come together? Or is it difficult to get people to see things along those lines, because you hear so much about what the guy in the White House is doing and how he's opposing and saying that global warming and all that kind of stuff is a farce and a hoax. And there are people like ourselves who feel totally different from that. How do you align those two sides to come to an agreement or somewhat of an agreement?
Well, the child in chief is simply being irresponsible with this, as with so many things.
Okay.
But there are two ways to go about it. One is to argue the facts and figures. And overwhelmingly, the science says climate change is real.
Okay.
It's here. It's hurting us. But I come at it from a different perspective, which is to say, okay, assume climate change is a hoax.
Mm-hmm.
Don't go to Vegas on the odds of that being true.
Mm.
But if all you are is a profit-maximizing capitalist, you'll do exactly what you'd do if you were scared to death of climate change, because we know how to solve this problem at a profit.
Okay.
So let's go. If it turns out it's a hoax, we'll make a lot of money. If it turns out it's real, we'll make a lot of money.
Win-win situation.
And we're on our way to solving the problem. And that gets rid of a lot of the argument.
Wow. Yeah.
So Dr. Tony here again. Give us some examples to put this in perspective to the listeners. What's happening in Bhutan? What's happening with all of those governments that you are advising? What are they doing?
Well, obviously, it depends on the government. The Nordic countries have committed to go 100% renewable.
Wow.
Generally by around 2050.
That would be
Germany reckons to be 80% of the way by 2050.
Already.
Scotland reckons to be 100% renewable by 2020.
In three years.
And California has committed to be 100% renewable by about 2045 and is now debating doing it as early as 2030. Because of work by people like Dr. Mark Jacobson with the Solutions Project at Stanford, or Tony Saba. Tony is an entrepreneur, Silicon Valley entrepreneur, who has a book out called Clean Disruption.
Mm.
And you can go online, look at any of his videos. Tony and I were just together here in Colorado about 3 weeks ago. We shot a video you can get on the Colorado Renewable Energy Society website. What Tony says is, because of the convergence of technologies like the fall in the cost of solar, fall in the cost of storage, batteries,
and
things like the driverless car, mm-hmm. and then the convergence of business models, so transportation as a service.
Mm.
So rather than owning a car, you'd get on your mobile, you'd dial up, self-driving all-electric car would pull up to you in 5 minutes or less, and away you go to where you want to go. This, again, because of the technologies, because of the fall in the cost, doing it this way will be about 10 times cheaper than what you do today. Notice I haven't talked about polar bears. This is pure economics, pure business model. It's just going to be a whole lot cheaper. You may have seen this morning, Volvo announced that by 2019, it will only make electric cars.
Mm.
Yeah, I saw it.
Okay.
I saw it this morning.
Okay.
Yes, that's terrific.
Now, if Tony's right, by 2030, the world will be 100% renewably powered.
Mm.
Which is good.
It's wonderful.
Which is good, except that you're looking at the demise of the oil, gas, coal, uranium, nuclear, utility businesses, the auto industry, and the banks that hold the loan paper on all those other industries.
But
this is going to be the mother of all transitions if we do it wrong. If we do it right, it will generate millions upon millions of jobs, better jobs than we have now, jobs that are in our communities.
And
we will all live better. The air will be cleaner. Our energy will be cheaper. This is, if we do it right, the first step to building an economy for people, a world that works for 100% of humanity, as Buckminster Fuller called for.
And doing it right, it's a transition. And how do we make that transition?
We realize it's coming at us. We stop getting in its way. So recently, Nevada, the utility in Nevada said, oh, solar. People are putting solar on their roof. They're not buying so much of our coal-fired electricity. Let's slap a big demand charge on them. And so casinos like MGM, Caesars said, okay, we'll just leave the grid. We'll put up solar. We'll have our own batteries. Bye-bye.
Well.
At which point the utility said, oh, my God, and the state legislature said, okay, we're going to put back in place legislation favorable to people using renewables, and we're going to start figuring out how to integrate renewables into the grid. I mean, we've built the grid. It's useful. Let's use it. Let's just do it intelligently using the best of the new technologies as they come on. Now, in terms of the economics, Carbon Disclosure Project showed a few years ago that the companies that are managing and measuring their carbon and reducing their carbon pollution have 18% higher return on investment than companies that are the laggards, 67% higher ROI than companies that say, oh, climate change is a hoax.
Well, tell me this. You know, in working at Ford Motor Company, I saw transformations being made in terms of how the cars were built and the differences in emissions here in California and in the rest of the United States, because emissions laws were higher here. And so we had to do special things and change things around in order to do the transition. We're talking millions and millions of dollars. Now, to go from gas, to electric for a company, just one company like Ford Motor Company, is going to cost billions of dollars. How do you see that in terms of them adhering to what the UN says, what you're talking about, and the rest of the companies that are transforming as we speak? Because it just seems kind of difficult for me to envision them making that transition.
It will be difficult if they delay because they will be out of business. Think Kodak.
Okay.
The year in which Kodak made the biggest profit was the year before it went out of business.
Okay.
And Kodak had invented the digital camera, but it didn't believe in it. Oh, people are never going to use that.
Mm-hmm.
Kodak is no longer with us.
Right.
Tesla, wow. Little Tesla, sells 300 times fewer cars than General Motors. It is now worth more than General Motors, more than Ford Motor Company, and more than BMW.
Right, exactly. So why?
What business is it in? Is it a car company? No, it's a battery company. When Elon announced the Giga Battery factory up in Nevada, and then bought Solar City, what he did was build a new business model, an integrated technology company, so that he will sell you the solar panel on your roof as roofing tiles, the car to drive around in it, the battery in your garage, so that you can be your own power plant. Now, I do sort of this. I drive a Leaf. I'm not rich enough to own a Tesla. And my Leaf, by the way, has so far smoked off the line a Porsche, a BMW, a Mercedes, a Mustang, and one of these big coal rolling trucks. It's a screamer of a little car.
Yeah. You
high performance little car. I love it. And I don't go to gas stations.
Okay. You know, that's funny because I looked at your picture and I said to myself, I bet she rides Wild Stallion. She just looks like that.
Yes, I have done that.
Okay. You know, it's something else. Like Shell Oil, I mean, you've been a consultant for them. You've been consulting for Walmart. I mean, all these big corporations. And what I'm hearing you saying, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that they're going to have to transform or be put out of business, and something as big as Shell Oil, I mean they really gonna have to do some work. But evidently they're understanding what it is that you're saying, and seemingly they would do what you suggest.
Shell Shell is an interesting company. Years ago, they were one of the smartest companies in the world.
Uh-oh.
And they said, by 2050, we will be at least half renewables. We will be a diversified energy group.
Mm.
This was under the leadership of a man named Sir Mark Moody Stewart. Sir Mark rotated out, as managing directors do at Shell, and a man named Phil Watts came in. Phil said, no, we're an oil company. We're going to drill oil. We're going to sell oil. We're an oil company. The problem was he didn't have the proven reserves of the other oil majors, and so he cooked the books, and he got caught. Shell shareholders took a 40% share bath, loss of share value, and Phil got fired.
And they didn't like it.
They didn't like it at all. Now, Shell since then has been this schizophrenic company where they say, well, we're a natural gas company. Oh, well, we're still going to do some oil. We're going to have a solar division and an efficiency division and a wind division. But we're going to drill in the Arctic. Oh, well, no, we're not because it's too expensive. And the price of oil has fallen. You know, the Saudis are cashing out of oil.
They are. Okay.
This new crown prince, Mohammed bin Salman, has said, we're going to transfer to being a renewable energy country.
Okay.
We have a lot of sun. People say we're going to be the Saudi Arabia of solar.
We're going
to be the Saudi Arabia of solar, he said.
Wow. That's
so they are IPOing a part of Aramco, their oil company. They're selling off a chunk of the oil company.
Wow. Tell me this. We're on a college site. And so a lot of college students are listening. And something Dr. Tony and I talked about earlier was the fact that kids are getting out of college and have no idea of what they're going to do once they get out. How can they fit into this eco-sustainability piece comfortably, and what should they be about right now in terms of learning how to adjust to the change that's going to take place and how they can be a part of it?
One of the best things I think they can do is read science fiction.
Oh, wow. Oh,
Kurt Vonnegut. Okay. Clifford Simon.
Imagine a different future than you think it's going to be, because it's going to be different. Mm-hmm. We don't know how. We don't know what's going to happen, but it's going to be different.
Okay.
So first of all, train yourself to be intellectually creative and curious. Then study a little bit of everything that you are interested in. Because you don't know, the job you're going to have 10 years from now probably has not been invented today.
Oh, man, you're right.
So the most important thing you can do is learn how to learn. And be incredibly curious.
Right. Wow.
Try to understand everything about how the world fits together, how it works, what the dynamics are, and then think deeply about what do you want to do with your life. You got one. You go around once.
Okay.
What do you want to do?
Wow.
So that's maybe what's right with me, because I've read a lot of science fiction.
There's a lot right with you, Tony.
There is another Tony in the game, which was the chairman of British Petroleum, that he tried to change the name to Beyond Petroleum, and then reverted back. What's happening at the university level, at the education level? I know you're very, very involved and very interested in that, very engaged in that all your life, both you and Amory. What's happening in education to fit the budget, to move on, to go, to open up these horizons and to open up these avenues so we have a better managed nation and country and world?
Well, one of the things that I do is teach. I help create programs. So I helped create a program up in San Francisco that was one of the first MBAs in which sustainability was baked into every class. They kind of went off the rails in about 2010. So I helped start one in New York City called Bard MBA, which is where I teach now. And we teach all of the business verticals, marketing, finance, accounting, all of the things that you would get at a normal business school, but every single class is taught from the perspective of how do you honorably do business in this time of crisis, in which we have 65 million refugees now on the move.
Wow.
We're losing every major ecosystem on the planet.
Right.
We're in a climate crisis.
Mm-hmm.
We may be in a crisis of democracy.
Right.
There
right.
are a lot of challenges facing us.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. How do you do business in this sort of a world? How do you create an economy in service to life?
Mm-hmm. Mm. You know, there's something that I want to touch on because, you know, a lot of times we use only one side of our brain. You know what I mean? And the other side is all the creativity and all the things that we need to balance out that other side. You know, and you're talking about a university, Bard University, for instance. And from what I'm understanding, it's not totally academic. You know, there are other valuable lessons learned as well. And then I noticed that you were working with the DETAO.
Yes, the Dao Academy
in
China.
Yeah, and that's I think that's so important to be well-rounded in whatever it is that you're teaching, whatever it is that you're learning. And America is not the only place on the planet that can teach students, you know, it's all over the world. So tell us a little bit about that academy.
The Dao was created by a Chinese business person who said, the way we learn, the way we teach in China is typically rote memorization. This will never prepare us for the world that we're living in. We need to learn how to innovate. So he started bringing over people from Hollywood, filmmakers, animators, and then landscape architects, and then a group of us who do regenerative economics, ecological economics, ecosystem accounting. Mm. And so we helped China build the first protocol for counting the value of natural capital. And the Chinese scientist who was working with us called us up and said, I've clearly got it wrong. We were counting the value of things like mangrove groves in Hainan, China's equivalent of Hawaii, very beautiful resort island in the South China Sea, and the value of clean water to the tourists and the value of clean air, the value of coral reefs to slow down hurricanes that would otherwise do damage to the resorts. And he said, the value I'm counting for all this natural capital is worth more than the economy that is officially counted. Mm. And we said, then you have it right, because that's the way, that's what's always been found when people do this kind of valuing of ecosystems. And in fact, a group called True Cost found that if we properly value the loss of ecosystems by our cheater capitalism, no company on earth would be profitable.
We had Aisle Anderson just a week or two ago on the program, and she asserted the same conclusion that if we balance out the losses and the wins, then we're not making any money.
Now, Hazel is one of the great economic thinkers of our time. You're very, very lucky to have had her on the program.
Yes, we were, and we were very, very happy to have her. Very profound thoughts and bringing in those issues and those solutions that are not in the mainstream radio or any radio that we know of. That so we're bringing them here on campus at UC Irvine, and we remind our listeners that we are volunteers in here. We're not paid, and support this station and call the station and support us and support efforts like this.
Yeah. And you know, it takes one to know one. So however you speak of Hazel, it reflects in you as well. So we're so blessed to have you on here as well. I need to say this. Let me say this. This is Calvin, and you're listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. You've accessed Awoke, an experience in transformation. One thing I must let you know is that the views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents. Enjoy the show. Okay, back to you with something that I ran across, and I have no idea what it is, you know, but it hit me, and that's Unreasonable Institute. You have a lot of words that you use, and they just hit me hard. So give us a little bit of detail about an Unreasonable Institute.
Unreasonable Institute is one of my very favorite organizations in all the world. I've been a mentor for them since they were created. This was done, you ask what should young people do? A couple of young men who were at the University of Colorado graduated, turned right around, and created the Unreasonable Institute. And they bring young entrepreneurs from around the world to Boulder, or in the session that I'll be at starting Sunday in outside of Washington, D.C., mm-hmm. working with the State Department. And we help them get their companies right, figure out what it will take to go to scale with a company that is solving some of the really gnarly problems mm-hmm. on the planet.
Okay.
So, for example, some of the companies that I'll be working with are like EcoFlora, which is doing life on Earth protection, building biopesticides. So rather than using the nasty chemicals, enabling farmers to protect their crops using natural means.
Yes.
CAB, SEAB Energy, they're a designer and manufacturer of micro-waste to energy plants, so they use anaerobic digestion to produce, in effect, natural gas. They're working in places from India to the U.S., U.K., Portugal.
Did you say aerobic or anaerobic?
This is anaerobic.
Anaerobic, okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Please continue.
EcoPost, which is taking waste plastic in Kenya and making it into posts for fencing or for signposts. There's almost no wood where they're working, but there's plenty of waste plastic. Uncommon Cacao, which is helping cacao farmers deliver transparently sourced quality cacao to the premium chocolate market and do so in ways that don't use child labor or slave labor. There are several clean energy companies. There are a couple of desalinization ones. There's a company achieving gender equality called Liberty and Justice. It's Africa's first and leading fair trade certified apparel manufacturing company. There's a company out of Latin America that is teaching indigenous women how to produce high fashion garments and then sell them at a fair rate. So a whole array of companies, and so I'll be sitting down with these entrepreneurs and helping them with whatever challenges they have, helping them get investors, helping them build investor-ready pitch decks, and, you know, doing the sort of work that I do when I teach at the Bard MBA, but for young people from developing countries.
Oh, wow.
This is very interdisciplinary, and that's... Wow.
Yeah. We mentioned Hazel and we're talking to you, and you know, the first thought that comes to my mind, the first name that comes is Eleanor Roosevelt. You know, I don't know why that came up, but it just did. And it seems that, you know, the innovation and the courage and the wherewithal of women is sorely unseen and unappreciated, you know, and that's been going on for forever, you know. And even though I think everybody has something to offer equally to the planet that we, the universe that we reside in, but we all know that women minorities, and there are different categories of people who are not recognized for who they are, but recognized for who they're supposed to be. And when you go past that, you know, you're going to have a problem. Just give us a little idea, especially for the young ladies that are listening, what it is that, that you do that, that kind of negates gender.
It never occurred to me that there were any limits upon me. Now, in part, okay, this is because my mother was a remarkable woman.
Okay.
She took a law degree with Dick Nixon and, as I said, organized right, for John L. Lewis in the yeah, coal fields of West Virginia.
Okay.
Had 14 different careers in her life.
Wow.
So just always told me, you can be anything you want to be. Okay. Go anywhere you want to go. Do anything you want to do. Just have the courage.
Okay.
In many places, that is incredibly hard. I've worked with women in Afghanistan where choice is not something that they're given.
Okay.
And helping them strive to rebuild a country that's been destroyed by 30-odd years of war, that is in the grip of the warlords, that was invaded by the Soviet Union, then invaded by the Taliban out of Pakistan. Then we came in, and it's a devastated country. They're trying to rebuild it from scratch. We were trying to do a program we called Green Afghanistan. If you're going to build it from scratch, do it right the first time. Use world best practice in sustainable ways to provide energy, water, housing, healthcare, sanitation, transportation, education, agriculture. And I left in 2006. I thought we'd broke our teeth on it. I could not get the aid agencies to care.
Oh, wow.
And I was sitting in the back of a lecture room listening to a case being given by a gal who had written a business case for Harvard Business. And she was talking about how the national phone company had put solar to power their cell towers, which was something that I suggested to the young head of the national phone company at a meeting at Asian Development Bank. Well, he went and did it. And I had said, if you do this, once you have solar in the villages, you can have a refrigerator. It's one of the few places that still has polio.
Okay.
You can have vaccines.
Oh, wow.
If you have electricity, you can have a computer. Train a woman as a midwife. Train somebody as an emergency medical technician. You can handle most of the health problems that arise in the villages. When I was there, one in four children died before the age of five.
Oh,
one in 20 women died in childbirth. These are wholly fixable problems. So once you have phones, you can do telemedicine.
If
the EMT doesn't know what they're doing, get on the phone, call a doctor in Kabul. Worst case, you get a helicopter launched. He did it. They cut in half the death rate of children before the age of five.
Okay.
And I was sitting in the back of the room with tears dribbling down my face saying, I did that.
That's, oh, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. You know, your humbleness is just, it just beyond me, because the way you talk is like, oh, everybody does this, right? It's like the things you are doing are beyond my comprehension. You know, I never would even dream of being able to talk to someone like you in that regard. You know, and I'm sitting here looking at Dr. Tony. You know, I'm thinking about Hazel and all the other people that I've met in a very short period of time. We're talking about a year, and I've been looking for you guys all my life. You know, I'm 68 years old, and I've been searching the globe for you. And I guess the thing is, when the student is ready, the teacher appears, and I am definitely that student. You know, and I'm so glad for you guys' appearance. It's just incredible to me to know that this many people exist on this planet that are really concerned about our well-being, because I'm so accustomed to the lies and the myths and the hoaxes and all those kinds of things that exist in the world. And to me, it was like it was if you put it on a scale, the bad was outweighing the good, and now I've gotten a different look at it. And so I just want to say right now that I so appreciate what you're doing, and thank you for taking the time out to be on the air. And I just had to say that before, you know, we got too late. But
Well, thank you, but you're the one who has the radio program. Without you, I wouldn't be here talking.
Okay. I want to kind of take this natural capitalism solutions to the neighborhood. I want people who are not in college that are listening to the show, people who are working very hard every day on their jobs, and these jobs are not guaranteed. You know, they don't know if they're going to get Social Security, retirement, none of that stuff. People like that, what does this concept, how does it help them, or how can they listen in and say, oh, wow, that's something. Let me support that in every way that I can.
Each of us, particularly since the last election, needs to start looking at our neighborhood and saying, who are my neighbors? If things get bad, and they may, who can help? Who in my neighborhood can knit a quilt? Who can grow a garden? Mm-hmm. Who can set a bone? What are our skills here in our own neighborhood? That's your capital.
Oh, okay.
That's community capital.
Okay.
Start making an inventory of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then ask yourself, how can we make the neighborhood better by supporting the existing businesses, by working with the existing businesses to make them a little more profitable and thus able to add a job here, a job there? How can we help young people in the neighborhood start new businesses?
Mm-hmm.
How can we ensure that a young person who might be looking to turn bad has the support they need, someone to talk to, the mentoring? These are things that any person can do in their own neighborhood just by reaching out. Everything from girls clubs and boys clubs to junior achievement to Rotary to all of the citizen organizations in your neighborhood. Become active. Who is running for your city council person? Who's running for your state representative? Go and talk to them. Tell them what it is you want. Politics is a contact sport. And we've allowed people who have interests different than those of us who live in a community to get into power and to impose their will on us.
Mm-hmm.
We need to take back our country.
Right,
we need to make democracy real and alive and participatory again.
Wow.
This is something every one of us can do and must do, or we will lose democracy as we know it.
Right.
There's a mathematical historian at, I believe, the University of Connecticut named Peter Turchin, who says humanity collapses in 10 years.
Does
to
it
which
pick
I
back
say,
up?
That is a profoundly irresponsible thing to do. We have all the technology we need to solve all the problems facing us.
That's right.
We know
That's
how right. to feed everyone.
Mm-hmm.
We know how to give a decent life to everyone. If you took the bonuses, just the bonuses, that were paid in 2014 to the Wall Street bankers and distributed it to people who are making minimum wage, it would double the minimum wage.
Wow.
There's lots of money.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We're allowing it to be spent in the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
We're allowing people whose interest is not our own to run things. Let's take our country back.
You know, there's a, as far as I'm concerned, there's a feeling of lack among most of the people. And that sense of lack is causing them to feel that the only way that I'm going to be able to survive and maintain what I already have is to get more, you know, and that kind of mindset permeates our whole society. And what I'm hearing in essence is that all of that can change. And if humanity changes in 10 years, I mean, we can do something in 10 years time. So in terms of consciousness and getting people to understand that this is serious stuff. You know, we're in serious trouble because the media as it exists today is not going to expose that. So how do you feel about that in terms of looking at the possible demise of democracy and everything good, you know, if we don't do something about it and do it quickly?
We're in a mess.
Right.
Or as Tommy Lee Jones said, if we're not, it'll do till the mess arrives.
Okay.
But the mess was created deliberately
mm-hmm.
by 36 men who met at a hotel outside Montreux, Switzerland in 1947.
Oh, wow.
A man named Ludwig von Mises, who was appalled at what National Socialism, Nazism, had done to trash Europe. A man named Friedrich Hayek, who was scared to death of the rise in the East of Soviet collectivism. A man named Milton Friedman. They and 33 of their good buddies argued for 10 days, and they built an ideology called neoliberalism. Which had at its root the belief that humans are basically greedy bastards,
that we're
in it only for ourselves, but that's okay because the market is perfect, and in this perfect market, if we are in tooth and nail claw competition, the greatest good for the greatest number will somehow magically arise. If you keep government out of it, government has to stay small and out of the way. It maintains a military, it maintains a police force to ensure the working of the market, and that's the only role for government. They built an organization called the Mont Pelerin Society. They got their members as advisors to every head of state on the planet, three of them as heads of state. They built the Chicago School of Economics. If you've had an economics class, this point of view is in your head.
Oh, wow.
And we've all bought that story. It's a story, and it's not true.
Right.
The evolutionary
right.
biologists now tell us that when humans, well, pre-humans, came down out of the trees in Africa, we were naked, our claws were pretty inadequate, our teeth were pretty puny, we weren't as fast as a lion. The pre-humans almost went extinct. We did not go extinct because we had not only two drives of acquire and defend, which is what the neoliberals said. We had a third drive, which was to bond. We survived because our ancestors cared more for the group than any one of them cared for themselves.
Beautiful, beautiful.
They worked together. And say the evolutionary biologists, we also had a drive to comprehend. To understand. And so we created religion, mythology, explanations, stories. We are the storytelling species.
Right.
We need a new story.
Yeah.
The old story, neoliberalism, has brought us to the edge of a cliff.
Okay.
And so a team of us from around the world are working on a new story.
Oh, my God.
And I've just finished a book, which will come out probably this fall, called A Finer Future.
Oh, man.
Creating an economy in service to life, which lays out the extent to which, we're in trouble, and we can solve it. We can entrepreneur our way out of this mess. This is what humans have always done. We're not rabbits who freeze when there's a threat.
Okay.
We bond together and we build solutions.
Wow, you know, I feel like passing an offering plate. That was a sermon. Wow, you know, I'm the type of guy, I want to know everything. You know what I mean? So I'm definitely going to do some research on that because that's something that has bothered me for a long period of time. Why are people so caught up in that? But then if it was created, it makes it easier to understand, because when you have to capital not only to create but to perpetrate what it is that you're saying, that's an advantage. And then to hear, you know, because there's always an alternative, to hear that you're a part of the alternative solution is makes it even more exciting for me to have you on the show and to be able to share this information with the listeners, because people perish because of lack of knowledge, and we have to share this knowledge. We have to, and I so appreciate you doing that.
There is a great article in The Guardian newspaper by a man named George Monbiot, M-O-N-B-I-O-T, on neoliberalism.
Okay.
And it lays out what I've just said.
Okay. What's his name again? How do you spell that?
George Monbiot, M-O-N-B-I-O-T.
Okay.
On neoliberalism.
Okay. Wow. Wow. And so this, you know, what's the name of your book again so we can be on the lookout for it?
Well, titles belong to the publisher, but okay. The working title at the moment is A Finer Future, Creating an Economy in Service to Life.
A Finer Future, Creating
an Economy in Service to Life.
An Economy in Service to Life.
And Monbiot's article is called Neoliberalism, the Ideology at the Root of All Our Problems.
The Ideology
at the Root of All Our Problems. Came out on April 15, 2016.
Okay. Wow. How you hold all this information in that head? I don't get it. You know, it's like a computer like myself. You know, the information is on the hard drive, but I just can't access it as quickly as a lot of people. So that's amazing. In terms of the goals, and I'm talking like short term, how do you access, or not access, but look at, you know, this is what I'm going to do this week. This is what I hope to have accomplished in a month, a year, 10 years, 100 years. How do you do that in terms of categorizing what it is that you do? Because you got so much stuff going on, so much going on.
I work with a great team, okay. My staff at Natural Capitalism, and I sit down, and we have the usual business conversation. How are we going to stay in business? How are we going to make enough revenues to pay our salaries?
Mm-hmm.
And so we put out proposals to clients to hire us to do consulting for them.
Oh, okay.
All of my teaching revenue, all of my speech revenue goes to Natural Capitalism.
Oh, wow. Wow.
People support us. We're a nonprofit, so people send donations.
Mm-hmm.
We're having a great fundraiser coming up. If anybody happens to be in Denver, a group called Waste Farmers called us up and said, could we support you?
Oh, man.
This is a company that takes food waste and makes it into soil.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the guys plays in a band, and he said, what if we had a party?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I said, hey, I like parties. So on the 26th of July, at a place called Battery 621, we're having a party with three bands.
Oh, my God.
And me.
Okay. You know, that's amazing. You know, this universe is something else, because all the information is out there, and a lot of times people get the same information at the same time. And Dr. Tony and I, before we came to the show, were just talking about that Waste Farmers, but we didn't know that it actually existed. We were just talking about taking waste and making something out of it, you know. And I've learned how to compost and things of that nature from Dr. Tony, and it's amazing to me that I don't have to empty the garbage as much as I used to, you know, just from you know, composting the food. When you merge with people like this, it has to be such a great feeling of accomplishment, even though you might not have done anything or put anything in place yet. How does that feel for you? Because I'm so excited right now about all this that I'm gaining, and to hear that, you know, you're steadily doing stuff and people are coming to you pretty much, you know, to collaborate on what it is that we all are supposed to be doing. We're responsible for this planet. We are.
Well, if you realize there are good people the world around.
Mm-hmm.
And there are people who care the world around.
Mm-hmm.
And again, when humans are threatened, we pull together.
Okay, yeah.
And people are pulling together now in ways that I have never seen.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And again, I've been an activist all my life. I have never seen the level of activism all around the world.
That's good to hear. So good to hear. Wow.
And we have now the technology of the internet.
Mm-hmm.
We can be in touch with people. So I'm building a new organization, probably going to be called the Well-Being Economy Alliance.
Wow.
That's we terrific. All, with people in South Africa, people in the UK, people in Germany, people in China, people all across the United States, And because of the internet, we can have a global organization that mm-hmm. begins to pull together activists everywhere to solve the problems facing us and build a finer future.
Right. Wow. Wow. Dr. Tony, you had
something? So, Hunter, Germany is already producing daily 30 or 40% of their electricity. Sweden has great plans. Norway has great plans. France has come up with a better proposal that we make the planet great again instead of just one iconoclastic or schizophrenic country, whichever way you want to look at it. So we lost maybe our generation lost maybe 30 years. And the new generations are getting their degrees day by day, year by year. And we lost that opportunity of educating them and bringing them to the fold and have these ideas circulating and fermenting and boiling. You spoke about the good people. And where is the lever? Where is the... where is the transformation? Where is this going to move over? And there is a chance that those 10 years will not pass or will not pass in vain. The Australians are talking about the same thing. Several scientists in Australia, they are saying human race has maybe 20 or 30 years on the planet, and that's it, maybe the end of the century. We know the problems, we know the solutions, and we want to win. We want to win. What do we do?
I think what we do, each one of us, is commit that every day I am going to do one thing. I mean, I can't do everything. I'm not everywhere. Most of us are not terribly powerful people. But you can do one thing every single day and get up in the morning and decide, what's that one thing going to be? To make somebody's life a little better? Mm. To help somebody? To learn something?
Mm-hmm.
To begin to explore how you could use renewable energy? To walk to work as opposed to driving a fossil fuel car?
Mm.
There are millions of activities that you can do every day to buy something from a local farmer or from a local store.
Wow.
Or just to smile at somebody that otherwise you might have ignored.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Every day, do one thing.
Beautiful.
And every day, ask yourself, what else could I have done?
Wow.
If we all do that, we'll make it.
Oh, wow. That's something.
Those are great words.
Yeah, definitely. I was going to ask you if you had anything to say in ending the show, but that was it. My God, that was a lot. You know, I just want to thank Dr. Tony for making me aware of your existence, you know, and now that I know you, I feel that I've known you for some time, and we definitely have to talk again. I also want to thank Ellie. She's sitting here in the studio with us. She hasn't said anything, but she's been really enthralled with what it is that you're saying, and I'm just so happy she's here. And of course, you know, we just all appreciate you for what you've done in this hour, you know, maybe 55 minutes worth of time, because I've learned more today from you than I learned in that economics class I took in college. So thank you so much for that.
Well, here's one more hint for you.
Okay.
You want to relearn economics,
uh-huh.
There's a marvelous book just out called Donut Economics by Kate Raworth. And if you go online, Donut Economics videos,
mm-hmm.
she has 7 short little videos, 2 minutes, 3 minute videos.
Okay.
That'll teach you everything you need to know about economics.
Okay. Thank you so much. And let us know, how can we get in touch with you and your company in case we want to donate, want to ask questions, that kind of thing? Can you give the listeners a website or whatever?
Sure. We are Natural Capitalism Solutions.com. www.natcapsolutions.org. That's N-A-T-C-A-P solutions.org. We'd love to hear from you.
Okay. Thank you so, so much, Hunter, and we hope to hear from you again.
Thank you, Hunter. Much, much appreciated.
Tony, okay. Great to talk. Thanks, all of you, Ellie, for okay. having this radio show and for spreading the word. I truly appreciate it.
Okay, okay. And I'm going to get you a recording of this of the show. And,
well, thank you,
know,
you
by
so
Friday.
Much.
Okay, okay. Okay, we'll talk again.
Inshallah.
All right.
Adios.
Inshallah. Okay. Okay, y'all. Wow. That's a lot, you know, and I'm taking up somebody else's time. You know, DJ Marmar is sitting in the wings waiting for me to get off the air, and so I'm gonna get off the air right now, but you guys stay tuned because he's gonna be bringing you some fine instrumentality. I'm talking about instrumentality where you don't hear any words, but you do. Can you dig that? So y'all stay tuned, and as always, in parting, I'll holler.